You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
I don't know if I'm just talking to nothing right now. Hopefully, if I am, you can just edit this into a really cool monologue. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of the ToneMob.com podcast. As usual, I'm your host, Blake Weilen, and for the second time, I'm talking to Brian Hamilton of Small Sound, Big Sound. How are you doing today?
Hello. Good. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, as I said the second time, that's because we tried to do this before, and then the computer gremlins decided to eat the file and take it away into wherever they take things.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. We had a nice talk, though, so, yeah.
It was.
Hopefully it'll be nice again.
Yeah, we had a nice icebreaker, and now none of you people get to know what we talked about. Maybe we talked about you.
Maybe I think we did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I definitely talked about you right there, the hat.
Yeah.
We talked about that guy, didn't we? He's so dumb. Oh,
I hate that guy.
Why is he always... He always has that look on his face like he has no idea what's going on.
And that hat. Really, anyone with a hat, I don't like. I don't trust them.
Oh, you don't trust guys in hats?
No. What are they hiding? What do they have under that hat?
Well, it could be male pattern baldness or something like... I mean, that's not really... You know, I wear a hat sometimes. I mean...
That's why I don't trust you.
Okay, I shouldn't have said that. Dang it. In fact, I think the only selfie I ever took, I have a hat on. Oh boy, this is bad.
Yeah.
You'll never be able to believe me.
I'm sorry.
So, how was the day? What were you up to this fine Thursday?
Not too much. I was making some pedals, writing some emails. Normal things I do on a Thursday. I belong to a local CSA in Philadelphia, so I pick that up every Thursday, which is nice. Which, for those people who don't know, that's community-supported agriculture.
Oh, cool.
I was about to say,
I'm dumb. I don't know what that is, but cool.
No, it's okay. I mean, probably a lot of people don't. It's nice. It's basically like just there's an urban farm in Philadelphia. It's called Greensgrow, and they provide a nice community service, to some low income people, and things like that. But they also provide a nice service for people who have some money to spend, and they just have nice, local produce and things. And you basically go and you sign up for a share and you pick it up once a week, and it's always different. It's always what's in season. And I think their radius is about 100 miles or so. So everything's, you know, relatively close.
That's really cool. That's awesome. I'm sure we got a bunch of stuff like that here around Portland. I probably should have been more familiar with that.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there's tons in Portland.
Yeah. Okay. That's awesome.
Yeah. You should look it up.
Did you make any good scores today?
I got some Romanesco, which is always interesting. It's sort of I think it's a relative of the cauliflower, somewhere in between a cauliflower and a broccoli. It's in the same family, at least. And it looks like a fractal, basically.
Really? You should
look it up. Yeah, it's very interesting. And it tastes kind of similar to an in-between of those two as well. It's a milder flavor. It's really nice, like roasted. It's good.
That sounds good. And here we are on the Broccoli Mob podcast. We're talking about vegetables and the people behind them.
There you go. They were touching on new subjects this time.
Oh, man. We're breaking new ground. This has never been explored before.
Great. It's the first time for everything.
It's good stuff. So we can jump right into it. And, you know, as I said, we've talked about this before, but we can have you tell all the other people that nice musical background story that you have. It's actually pretty interesting, so I'm down with hearing it again.
All right, well, I'll try to make sure it's all accurate and the same.
Oh, we won't know the difference, will we?
You might. You'll be like, no, that didn't happen.
No. You told me last time.
Okay. You're not a xylophone wizard.
Well, you could be. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. So I think I started last time. I went pretty far back.
That's cool. That's what we like.
Yeah, so, you know, I didn't really play any instruments growing up until middle school or so. And then around that time, I played saxophone and alto sax. And did that for a while, and it was nice. I think I was pretty good at it. But I was sent to an all-boys Catholic school where they didn't have a music program. And during that time, I basically completely forgot about it, gave it up. And then when I got sent back to public school, after I got kicked out of that place, started playing again. But this time, I don't think I went right back into playing in band or anything, but I had some friends who played in like, who like played in punk bands and stuff at the time. And we started this weird, like sort of punk ska trio. It was just like alto sax, guitar, and drums. So that was sort of my first band experience, and I'm sure it was really bad. but that was... Oh, actually, you know what? No. I did do something before that, or around the same time, that I forgot about last time.
Oh.
I had some friends and we played for like our... Oh, maybe it was around the same time. Yeah, it was like eighth grade talent show or something. And I sang in the band. And we did like, oh man, we did song number two by Blur.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah. And I think like some like MXPX song or something. Like, oh man, that was probably really, really bad.
Responsibility or something.
I don't know. Yeah, man, that was weird. I totally forgot about that.
Good
yeah,
times.
That was cool.
That sounds really very super familiar to me right now. I had a similar experience. That's awesome.
Yeah, was it a talent show kind of experience? Oh.
Oh.
Did you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. You're good.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah. Okay.
No,
well,
I still
anyway, I don't know what just happened right there, but let's just, I guess, okay, so then I did that thing. That happened very briefly, but then... Sort of lost interest. And then it was a couple of years. Wasn't really interested in music that much in terms of playing it. Still listened to tons of music. And I started smoking a lot of weed when I was in high school. And then I think it was like maybe my middle of my junior year. And I was at a friend's house. And we were all getting pretty stoned. And she had a piano. And I thought it would be a good idea to just start playing. And I did, and I just kind of made stuff up. And it turned out to be kind of cool, and everyone was, like, into it, and it was fun.
They're like, whoa.
Yeah, it was kind of, yes, totally. I mean, yeah, it was probably not that good, but, you know, we were pretty baked, so it was fun. And then the next day, I kind of woke up and decided that it might be a good idea to try to play piano for the rest of my life. And so I did.
Turns out it was a good idea.
Yeah, it turns out it worked. I practiced a lot every day. I took the easiest classes I could that next year in high school so that I could devote as much time to practicing as I could. And I ended up going to Berklee School of Music, which was really fun. And interesting. It's a really great school, and it was a good place for me at the time. But I was definitely pretty far behind a lot of the other students in terms of my technical ability at the instrument. So it was a little unnerving, and I think I was maybe a little shy at first because of that. But I met some really great people, and we played some really great music, and... played in a lot of different bands when I was there. My first band was with two really amazing musicians, a drummer and a guitarist. and we had a trio that was very Tortoise-like. It's kind of like a jazzy post-rock kind of weird band. And we did a lot of fully improvised shows. We used a lot of like radio. We did some shows where we played like radios, and that's sort of where I sort of started to get interested in pedals with that band.
Yeah, weren't you? It was like you were playing like the radios like through guitar pickups and stuff. Like
Yeah,
that's what I thought.
Yeah,
okay.
Guitarist in my band would do some cool stuff like that, and
that's rad.
Yeah, at the time I was using kind of a bogus keyboard for a while, but then I graduated to a Rhodes around then. And as I should have, I got a Fender Twin, which was the proper amp to use for that instrument. So,
yes, it is.
So yeah, I had that set up, and I started to get some pedals, which was nice. And like I said, the first pedal I got, I actually remember another first pedal I got too around that time, which was, one of the first pedals was probably, it was like a Turbo TS9 or something like that, Turbo Tube Screamer. And I thought that would be really good sounding for some reason on the Rhodes. Turns out it's not really that good sounding.
Okay, you live and learn. Well, come on. It should sound phenomenal, especially on the low end.
Yeah, I mean, I was covering a lot of the bass end of that band, and it just, like, you know, cut all the balls off of it. And obviously it was very mid-rangey, which was good because of that setup, you know, Rhodes Fender Twin. There's a lot of scooped mids there. So, I mean, it wasn't horrible, but it didn't do what I wanted it to do, and I didn't do what I thought it would do. And I remember actually around that time, I also got an Alesis MIDI-Verb, which is actually a really awesome sounding reverb for how like kind of cheap and
basic
it is. Yeah. Yeah. But it has a great, like really, really, really long, super washy verb that I think is pretty interesting. I mean, it's a rack unit, so you can't really like turn it on or off easily.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's just kind of like you just have to go for it. Full commitment with that pedal or rack unit.
Yeah, I dig those actually.
Yeah, they're neat. And yeah, I think I started, I got a DL4 around that time and fell totally in love with it. And that was like a kind of a big change, like a game changer pedal for me at the time. Just the looping functions were really, really interesting, and I could do a lot of neat stuff on my own. So you could, you know, loop a lot of really cool sounds with the Rhodes, banging on the pickups, so you open it up and like smack it and get all these nice weird acoustic electroacoustic sounds out of it. And you know, it's just you could be very expressive and kind of create these like great textures and explore it a lot on your own with, you know, making loops and stuff like that. Have a little time to listen to it. So that was really nice. And I did a lot of that stuff with that band.
I just had a thought.
Sure.
Yeah. Would probably be a cool thing to explain to some people. Most of this audience are guitar players.
Oh yeah. Guitarists.
And some,
right.
And some people probably, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people do know, but some people probably aren't familiar with the Rhodes. Could you maybe explain how that works and what it is? I mean, obviously it's a keyboard based instrument, but
sure.
Okay, that a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's something good. We didn't do last time.
Totally. No, and it makes sense. So Fender Rhodes is electromechanical keyboard. It was popular probably, you know, I think it was 70s time, maybe the late 60s. I don't remember when they first started making them. But anyway, it's an extremely heavy instrument. And
yes.
Full-size keys that feel like, you know, fairly piano-like. They have a weight to them. They're all very different. And they have hammers striking metal pickups, metal tines, I'm sorry, which in turn are connected to a pickup system. So each one has its own small little pickup And that is sent out through just like normal AppleJack. So it's pretty sure it's a passive system. So it is similar to a guitar in terms of its output. Rhodes do work really, really well with guitar pedals for that very reason, which is something that a lot of it, I guess, is better about it than some other keyboards. It'll interface like really, really well with most pedals. You don't have to like turn the levels down or up or like change anything too much, since most other keyboards have some sort of either their line level, because they're, you know, synths and they're made for interfacing with like mixers and studio gear and things like that.
Right.
Or other electro mechanical keyboards like a Wurlitzer, which similar to a Rhodes, except rather than striking these metal tines, it strikes metal reeds, which are then amplified with like a an active electronics like system. So that
I didn't realize that about the Wurlitzer.
So Wurlitzer, you have to plug it in to play it into the wall, and then it amplifies it, and it has two different outputs, and one is like a lower output and one is like a headphone output. At least I'm pretty sure that's what they're there for, but the one is much lower, but still it'll drive pedals a lot more than a guitar.
Right.
So, you know, it's sort of the difference between like a passive or an active guitar or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
But
sorry,
Rhodes are good.
Yeah.
No, it's cool.
I didn't mean to kick you off track. I just like dawned on me that some people may not have heard of that. So
no, it's totally good.
They sound amazing. They're one of the coolest. I'm a kind of a flunky. Well, I'm a flunky guitar player, but I'm even worse on piano, but I still would really like one just to mess around with. They sound,
yeah, they're beautiful instruments. I mean, they're all different too, which is nice. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, getting a piano or something like that, or a guitar. You know, they all feel different,
right?
And they kind of have a different character and sound to them. So, and there's different models of Rhodes as well. I don't remember how many different iterations there are, but you know, some are better than others, and some just sound different than others. Some have more of like an 80s kind of sound to them. Some are a little sparkly, more sparkly. Some have a little more like, you know, bark to them.
Right.
So yeah, it's a really cool instrument. It's great, but they're really heavy. They're really heavy, and they do take a little bit of work to maintain them. So they're not really for everyone, I think.
Right. Are there any, like, I've never seen one, but are there any modern manufacturers making Rhodes, or are they all vintage at this point?
You know, I think there is actually one. I think there is one company, and I don't know their name off the top of my head, but there's definitely one company that was making like reproduction Rhodes. I don't know if they still do it or if it was like a limited thing. I have no idea, but I'm almost positive that there was somebody making new ones.
I'm gonna have to hit the old Google on that. That's interesting.
Yeah, I think they were very, you know, very expensive, as they should be. I mean, it's an extremely complex instrument, and
yeah,
you know, it takes a lot of work to go into making one. I'm sure there's just a lot of parts, and it's just a lot that would go into it.
Right.
So yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so there's the Fender Rhodes 101. Now back
Rhodes 101. Yeah.
Back to the Brian Hamilton story.
Okay, yeah. So the rest of the music story is, you know, I played in a lot of other bands at the time. I played in like kind of a funky jam band. I played in like a sort of a slowcore, like shoegaze band. Some more like experimental like pop groups, and I had a I did forget this one last time too. I was in a improvisational laptop trio.
So
three of us, and we just played laptops. We did use some other keyboards and stuff when we played a couple shows. So it wasn't fully laptops, but it was, that was a really cool, project.
That's a trip.
Yeah, it was a good marriage of minds, I think, and tastes, because one of the guys, he was like just a, you know, a wizard at using like an NPC and like creating like beats and like rhythmic textures. And then I was kind of more of the like harmonic textural guy.
Okay.
And then the other guy was definitely more, he did a lot of the harmonic textural stuff too, but he definitely handled some more of the melodic ideas. So it sort of just like worked out. We just fell into place with that. That was really fun and interesting, and a new way to just like explore music with people. So, you know, Berkeley was great. It was just like a great opportunity to just like try a lot of different things and just see what sort of stuck. And I mean, I took a lot from all of those experiences, and I think all of those things sort of helped to inform where I went with it. Because prior to that, I'd wanted to, you know, I wanted to play jazz. And I totally looked up to like Brad Meldow and Keith Jarrett, you know, Bill Evans, like all these total legends.
Right.
Like extremely virtuosic players. But, you know, I started way late to the game, and I just felt like I was kind of behind the curve. So I ended up just trying to find a different way. And I think I did. So I'm pretty happy with how that went. Yeah, and that led me to play with more bands. And then I ended up kind of falling more into like rock band stuff. I played with another band called Bon Savants for a while. And we did a couple like US tours, played with some really cool bands there. And then that led me to my current band called Cymbal Z Guitars. And we've been playing together now for a long time, 5 or 6 years.
I was going to say, I heard your band before I knew of your pedal company. So it's been a while.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been doing it for a while. So, and I guess this is where I could segue into the other part of our conversation, which I thought was interesting. Which was, I don't know if that's appropriate for me to do.
It is. It's totally. Yeah, do it.
So, yeah. So you had asked me about some of the gear I currently use, and current keyboard and stuff like that.
Oh, which, right. Yeah. I wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely dig into that.
I was thinking about it a little more, actually, just because I liked that part of the conversation too.
So, so Brian, what gear do you use in your keyboard rig?
Yeah, it's not really useful to travel with a Fender Rhodes or anything like that anymore. Nobody really likes to do that except if you have crew and roadies and things like that, which is cool. we're not really at that point, so. I needed something I could travel with in this band and fly with. So I ended up getting a Nord Stage compact version, which has sort of organ style keys. It's a very light keyboard. It's 73 keys, I think. But it has a really cool pitch bender kind of thing on it, which is a little wooden. It's like a little wooden piece that sticks up. Like imagine a wooden rectangle that sticks out of the keyboard. And then it has like a crescent shape,
kind of like a
cut out of
saddle
it.
Type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. This conversation is coming back to me now.
Okay, yeah. That's what I thought.
It's like a saddle.
Yeah. I was like, this is sounding familiar. Oh yeah, okay. Yes, you put saddle. Your finger in it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You just kind of like place your hand on the keyboard and your one of your fingers. I'm pretty sure I use my middle finger for it. Just kind of drops in place on that, and you have a really really precise control over the pitch. Most synthesizers use a little wheel, pitch bending wheel on the bottom left of the keyboard. And it usually snaps into place in the center, so it keeps your original pitch. And then you can kind of pitch it up or down. It'll spring back to place. But this thing does the same exact thing, but it just has a very, very fluid feel to it. And it's just great. So I sort of used it and still use it a lot to do a lot of like pitch bending, kind of like whammy bar style, kind of shoegaze textures. So it was nice that I found a piece of gear that enabled me to find my voice a little more as well. And I think that's like what everyone is always looking for too. Everyone who's like interested in gear, you're always trying to find like the thing, you know, that kind of maybe defines you.
Yeah. Or not. You're usually looking for that, you know, that whatever's in your head that you, mm-hmm. and you're trying to get it out. And
yeah.
it's awesome when you find that one thing.
Yeah.
Whatever that is.
Sure. I mean, sometimes you don't intend it either. You're just like experimenting with someone, something, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, this is cool. I'm going to keep doing this. And then before you know it, it's like a thing, and it's like your thing. And that's kind of really nice when it just happens sort of organically, I guess you could say.
It's a really cool feeling when you kind of know, like,
yeah,
like that. Like you're in the moment, you're playing, maybe you're just experimenting with by yourself or maybe you're with your band, but I've had a couple moments when it was like, it was just a few months ago. I found this particular stack of pedals out of some new stuff that I had gotten. And mm-hmm. I was like, I'm just going to mess with it for a second. And I was playing around. And then like the next thing I know, it was like 2 hours later. And I was like all sweaty and just like dripping sweat, and realized I had just been like rocking as I would be with my band all by myself, like for no reason. And that's awesome. And it was like, this sound is awesome, and kind of made note of what I was using. And yeah, it was kind of a comical moment if somebody would have walked in and seen me pretending to be, I don't even know, some sweaty guitar monster.
Sure. Do you remember what you're using that, you know, let you see that sort of vision?
I was using my Telecaster into this fuzz face, kind of a fuzz face prototype that I'm kind of like kind of talking to a guy about right now, that he wanted mm-hmm. me to kind of scope out what I thought about it. And nice. And then into my, which overdrive was I using? It was my Mad Professor Sweet Honey, and then just a little bit of Verb and my Benson Monarch. And yeah, I had the fuzz face dimed, as you do with a fuzz face. And sure. Yeah, it was just, you know, it was doing that cool thing when you get a really good fuzz face where you can roll off the volume and it gets that sparkly, gorgeous, sexy sound.
Yeah, totally.
And then when I would roll it on, it was this roaring monster all the harmonics were jumping out just like you want. It just was this, it was a classic rock and roll guitar sound, but it was just so full and rich sounding. It was just really doing it for me. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Get that note bloom going on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Everything was reacting the way, you know, just the way you want it, just enough squish to it. It was cool. It'll be making its way onto probably my next album somehow.
Nice. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Good. I mean, that's, you know, the way things feel, obviously, is just as important as the way they sound. And I mean, it goes for pedals just the same as amps and guitars and keyboards and stuff like that. You know, once you just like, you can connect with something like that, it sounds better, you know, like it doesn't really matter what it is even. You're playing something and it just like feels good to play. It's always going to sound better to you.
Oh, 100%. I think that's kind of part of the problem with, like, I'm not trying to rip on this stuff or anything, but like the Axe FX and things like that, I've played them mm-hmm. and you know what, if I just was blind A/B testing, and not playing it, just listening, I may not be able to tell the difference. The digital guys have got really good at the modeling game right now as far as the sound goes.
Sure.
But it don't feel right. I mean, to me,
yeah.
it does not have that, that feel. If they can ever replicate that, then I don't know. That's going to be a game changer, but
sure.
I don't know how that's possible, to be honest.
Oh, I'm sure it'll get there. You know, as like processors get better, people write better algorithms. I don't know. Anything's possible. There's a lot of really awesome things that you can do with digital technology. So I'm sure there will be a point where it just feels basically the same.
Right. Well, and case in point with some of the digital delays and reverbs and stuff that have come out recently, those feel good to play. Like some of the tape emulation stuff, it's like I've been fortunate enough to play some real ones, and these are really, really good, some of them.
Sure.
Like, so if they can get there with that, then I'm sure the rest of the stuff's not too far behind. I don't know anything about it.
I've only sort of dipped my smallest pinky toe into that world, and it's pretty deep, so I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, well, anyway, sorry about that. We went off on a tangent, but yeah.
It's cool.
Your rig. We were talking about your rig. We started talking about feel. But yeah, what's the rest of your rig look like?
I'm pretty utilitarian. I've used pretty much the same pedal board for probably all of those 6 years. Maybe I've changed things like a little bit here and there. Maybe added one pedal, taken a pedal away. But it's pretty simple. And it's just because I think I just don't need anything else right now.
Right.
And my chain is a little odd. So some people probably would scream heresy at the way I have it set up. But it works for me, and there's reasons why. So it's Nord goes into the pedal board, and first I use a Rangemaster type pedal that I sort of modified a bit for my own use with keyboards. And that works like a lot of other people use sort of like whatever transparent overdrive type things, just like adds a little sparkle and makes it nice and generally allows the keyboard to play with the other pedals a little better and play with the amp a little better in my experience. And just lets it cut through a little more. And then from there I go into a DD5, I think, which is set to like a kind of short delay time, long repeats for sort of like a pseudo reverb-y type vibe. And I think there I go into Team Awesome, which is one of my pedals. It's a bass fuzz pedal. It has a clean blend on it. So you get some of those trails and things coming through from the delay before it. And that's usually set pretty heavy fuzz. And I go into another delay, which is longer repeats, and then into I have to curse to say this. I was trying not to curse, and I don't think I have so far, but either a fuck overdrive, which is another pedal of mine, or a mini, which is sort of like a simpler version of that one, and I kind of change them out depending on what stuff we're doing. I don't use the fuck for the songs we're doing now, so the mini works just fine for me. And then into a reverb. And then into...
I gotta ask. I mean, I know we try to keep it clean on here, but how did you come up with that name? I'm interrupting again.
No, it's okay.
I'm sure you get asked that a lot.
No, it's fine. It was sort of twofold. So one is that naming a pedal, naming your product, if you will, can be tricky, and there's a lot at play there. And I think part of it was just like the trend in gear sort of like has like dumb innuendos, like Big Muff, Swollen Pickle, Super Hard On, like
right,
whatever, like chesty whatever the fuck. So, you know, it's like something about that seems extremely juvenile and just like tacky to me. But I wanted to sort of like two things I wanted to. One was just cut through that and just say what people want to say, but don't, because they're putting out a product and they, most people who are, you know, maybe more wiser than I am, in terms of business mindedness, are thinking to themselves, I probably shouldn't name this like a word that most people aren't allowed to say or can't write or can't look at while they're at work, something like that.
Right.
Because they'll sell less of it, which is a perfectly valid point. But I just wanted to.
It's your company. You can do whatever you want. That's the beauty of
being the one person at the job, and you're just like, yeah, you know, I'm going to do that. Why not? Mm-hmm. If it's a complete failure, then it's fine. And it's like, it's not the end of the world. You just do something else. I could take the exact same circuit, put it out under a different name that's clean, and see how that goes. And then, you know, whatever. But thankfully that didn't happen. People are okay with it for the most part. But yeah, so that was sort of one part of it. And the second part of it was just that, you know, I've played a lot of overdrive pedals and stuff like that. And I never really liked, that sounds like a weird thing to say too. I never really liked many overdrive pedals in general.
Right.
So that was sort of my railing against saying like, you know, fuck overdrive, you know?
Okay. All right.
Even though it is an overdrive pedal. So but it's you... sort of like, it can be clever or really stupid no matter how you look at it.
Whatever the user, as with music, it's whatever the end user wants it to be.
Yeah. But on a third note also, there's another layer there. Also, there is a, you know, weird kind of feature to it that allows you to completely fuck up your signal. And that was sort of the other part of it, which is more straightforward, if you will, but also, again, using maybe the wrong words to convey that information.
It's a trifold signal. The layers are deep. It's an onion trifold. Of an overdrive.
It's an onion. Yeah, it should be called the onion overdrive, actually.
Well, then would it still be an onion if it was an onion overdrive? I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with that.
It would be a leak.
Oh, yeah, we're back to the vegetables.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to bring it around.
It comes full circle, back to the veggies.
Yep. Yep.
Love it. So yep. I know where we went last time with this. So from that, like, your musical background and everything, how did that lead you into starting to build pedals? It was just, like, being unhappy with what was on the market, or was it just kind of wanting to start circuit bending and see what was up?
Yeah, so thank you. You gave me the prompts there so that I would tell the right story. And I'll try to condense this one too, because I think I talked longer about that other stuff than I needed to. So yeah, it was when I was in school, when I was at Berkeley, I was studying mostly performance stuff, but also I was starting to get really into electronic music, and I started studying a lot of I'm totally fumbling my words right now. Studying a lot of synthesis as well and sound design. So I was concentrating on that just as much as the performance stuff. So I was learning that there was a lot of cool things you could do with sound in the digital domain, especially in software-based stuff. Just plugins alone, but not even counting like all the really cool other software that exists, like Max MSP and Reactor and things like that, which are like these graphical programming environments where you can create really amazing sound manipulating and sound generating instruments and plugins and devices. So it was then that I was also, so again, I was playing a lot with people's, and I felt there was a pretty big divide between the two. Software stuff and the performance stuff. And some of that I bridged a little bit, I guess, with the laptop trio thing, but for a lot of it live playing, it just felt like, man, there's so many like really powerful things that you could do to sound, and just like there's not, that doesn't exist in many pedals. So I started sort of circuit bending stuff at the time, thinking that that might have been like an avenue that would have been cool to go down. And it was for a little while, but there's a lot of like trial and error, like unanswered questions in that. You're just kind of like messing with things, touching things, and you don't really know what's going on unless you have the schematics for the whatever you're circuit bending. And it's just like a whole other world. And I guess maybe I didn't have the patience for it, but it made me want to learn more about electronics in general so that I could maybe make something without just like fumbling around in the dark. And that's kind of what led me to start making pedals, I guess. There's a lot of reading and asking questions online, mostly, you know, online reading, just finding what other people had looked at before me and, you know, reading like Craig Anderton's books and books about like designing filters and things like that. And I think also it was around that time that I had bought some, probably my first like boutique pedals, which were also Death by Audio pedals, which I think are great and aesthetically.
Yes, they
really
are.
Yeah, they're totally great. And Oliver, like, he's a good dude doing a lot of really cool stuff. And the aesthetics really spoke to me at the time, and they still do. And I'd bought like a Total Sonic Annihilation, which I used a ton at the time, which is a feedback looper. So a really simple pedal, but it looked good. So
you can do a lot with it.
You can do so much with it. And then I bought another pedal from Oliver, which was probably a nightmare communication between me and him, basically commissioning him to make this custom pedal. And what he ended up giving me was the prototype for the robot, which is sort of like a weird kind of glitchy like pitch shifter thing.
Yeah.
And it was really cool. It wasn't exactly what I thought I was going to be getting, but it sort of made me think about like, okay, like I have these thoughts in my head about sounds I want, and it's really hard to convey to other people how to get there. So maybe I just need to sort of like experiment more and figure out how to do it on my own, which was another big impetus for trying to just like figure it out. So, you know, I just like built some like simple circuits at first, like a green ringer, I think was the first thing, and maybe like a simple boost. And then I got some kits. I just dove right in with really complicated stuff after that. I felt emboldened by building one or two things that worked fine.
Right.
So I don't know if that was good or bad, but the next thing I built was just like a incredibly complicated, like many, many knobs and switches, modified VB2, Boss VB2, which is a vibrato. And I mean, it just kind of went from there. I didn't really think too much about it being a thing that I would want to turn into a business or anything like that. As I'm sure most people don't when they start doing it. Sort of just, I loved doing it, and I first started just to make some stuff for friends who were, you know, wanted things, and that kind of led to actually the Team Awesome. So that was how that pedal came about. It's just a friend who wanted a particular thing. Seemed like, oh, maybe some other people want this too.
So at what point did you decide that this was going to be like a legitimate business where you were going to, you know, kind of make these available for sale to everybody and not just your good buddies and whatnot?
Yes. So that time was, it's really funny thinking about what I just said and thinking about what actually happened, and then putting the two together in my mind again. It's a weird thing when you like talk about yourself and you say the same thing again. It's like feels like it wasn't real or something.
It wasn't, Brian. Yeah,
it was real.
No. This was all a dream. This is all a dream.
I know.
Or a nightmare.
Yeah, so A little bit of both. So I was living in New York at the time, and I sold some, you know, had some friends who got some pedals, sold some to them, gave some away, whatever.
Right.
And it was then that I figured I would try to just start selling some in maybe some stores. So the closest store to me, which was a great, great place, Main Drag Music in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Really, really great store, very supportive people. And they were, you know, I just kind of walked in there one day and I said, "Hey, I make pedals. I live really close to here. You guys want to carry them?" And they were like, "Yeah, sure. We love that." And those, I think it was like 3 Team Awesomes I brought them first. And those 3 went to like people who were doing cool stuff and were like touring. One of them was Chris Taylor from Grizzly Bear.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so it's like they just happened to go get in some neat people's hands right away. And it was around that time that I think there was some forum stuff. Some people knew about me on some forums that I was following. But I wasn't really – I didn't have a website even for like a year after any of this, or 2 years even. It was bizarre. Like people had to contact me via only email or like – I don't know, it was probably had like a MySpace page at the time or something. and like nothing else. It was just like, "Hey, contact this dude through an email to get this pedal." Seems like a totally like sort of like backdoor deal.
You're doing like the Paul Cochran thing.
Sort of. Yeah, I guess so. It was just, but even weirder because I just had an email address. He at least has a phone number you can call and like talk to a human being. I don't know what's weirder or not, but I guess it's weird that he still does that.
It's awesome.
I think, you know, it's works for him, so that's all that matters. Yeah. Really, it's like, it's, you know, it's not broken, so don't fix it.
Yeah, there you go.
So I'd been sort of doing that, and people, you know, kept emailing me. People kept wanting to get more pedals, so things were cool. It seemed fine to me, and it was around that time that I started playing with cymbals. And when that happened, I also coincidentally split up with a girl that I had been in a very, very long relationship with, and I decided to move from New York to Philadelphia. And at that time, it just sort of, you know, stars aligned, and I just, all those things sort of happening at the same time. And I had to quit my job, obviously, to move, so I figured when I moved that I didn't really want to get another sort of crummy job that like the one I was working, and I would rather just try to make pedals. And thankfully Philadelphia has a slightly lower cost of living than New York. So at the time it was sort of an easy move and an easy situation. So, you know, it was very fortuitous.
Nice.
Right place, right time, I guess. And then I finally got a website.
And then
it wasn't until like a year or two after that that I was like, I need a website.
So do you have a particular pedal that is your favorite that you make right now?
I still think that the Fuck Overdrive is really cool. I think it's just like kind of weird, and like, it's not, to me, it seems, it's not a thing that's been done before.
Okay.
And I know that seems like a little pretentious of me to say, and I'm say it without any pretension. I don't think it's a thing that has been done before in exactly the same way. And I think it's kind of, I think it's an interesting pedal. I think some people really get it and it totally resonates with some people. And then other people, it's like, oh, whatever, that doesn't do what I wanted it to do or thought it should do. And that's cool. But yeah, I think it's, I still really like it a lot. I think it's probably in some ways my favorite pedal that I make. But it's purely for selfish reasons. I just think it's, I think it's like a neat idea. And I think there's a lot of different things you could do with it. Actually, speaking of that pedal, it was kind of cool. Another tangent, but kind of a fun story. So this guy who had emailed me a couple times this year, and I sort of failed. I'm constantly behind on emails. So again, it is just me at this company, so I'm kind of behind a lot on everything all the time. But I try really hard to...
That sounds really familiar.
Yeah, I'm sure. So there was a guy who had emailed me a few times this year to get a pair, like a stereo pair of Fuck Over drives. And, or to just, you know, for me to make like a stereo version for him. And I totally spaced out on getting back to him. And then he actually got in touch with me yesterday, and he had said that he bought two from a retailer, which is great. That's what they're there for. And he was having problems with them. They weren't working. So it's also usually a good troubleshooting lesson as well for other pedal builders as well. Sometimes things are really easily done over email. And you are still there, right? I didn't lose you.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm still here.
Okay. Sorry.
I'm like listening super intense. No, no, no. And okay. Wondering where this is going. Like, I'm so curious.
It's going somewhere good. I'm sorry to interrupt my own story. So generally when people have problems with pedals too, it's like, you know, you email them back and you say, hey, well, did you plug it in the right way? What kind of power supply are you using? Et cetera, you ask questions.
Right.
Generally when that happens, I like to have people call me because sometimes something weird happens and you can get to the bottom of it really quickly through a phone call rather than this like long drawn out email process.
Yes.
So that's what happened today. This guy called me and, he was like pressing the switch. He was like, yeah, nothing happens when I press the switch. It like doesn't change the sound at all. And I was like, well, that doesn't sound right. Because if you turn it on and it like doesn't work, you should hear no sound because that means the switch is functioning.
Right.
And if it's just like you press it and you still hear the exact same sound, then I don't know how I could have wired, like there's no way I wired that switch like that. It's just not possible. Because I use little daughter boards for the switches. So I was like listening to him like switch it on and off a bunch of times and like play. And then finally it struck me and I said, hey, do you have other pedals, right? Which is a kind of a funny question to ask him. And he said, yeah, totally. And I was like, all right. And I was like, well, I don't want to offend you, but are you pressing the switch hard enough? And he was just like, and then I hear a click, like a snap. And then he's like, oh, and it's like way louder and it was on. So he was just like, because the left switch on a Fuck Overdrive is a momentary switch.
Right.
So he just assumed both of them were momentary switches. And he was doing the same thing and not pressing it down completely. So both pedals were totally fine. They worked completely normally. But it was just a funny thing. Anyway, that was also a tangent on my tangent. The point of this whole story was that in this whole conversation with this guy, also what I got out of this conversation that I wouldn't have gotten through the email. We were talking for a little while and he was like asking me questions about it. So some of the genesis of the Fuck Overdrive is that I'm a huge fan of a composer named William Basinski. And he makes sort of like really, really beautiful, like very like ambient sort of soundscape music, I guess you could say. I don't, you know, there's not really a better way to put it. A lot of it is piano based, but he has a particular collection of records called the Disintegration Loops, and the idea
I think I've heard of those before.
Yeah, so the idea behind those records was that he made these tape loops, and I feel like maybe I just made this, I've changed the story in my mind now to my own story, but I guess he had made these loops that were on analog tape, and when he went to transfer them to a digital format, I guess like some of them were damaged or something like that. And he noticed that while he was recording them, that the tape would just like gradually disintegrate or, you know, wear away. And so what he did was, rather than just, you know, think like, oh man, these things are ruined, he decided to, I guess, record the sound of that. So he recorded all these loops slowly disintegrating. And I mean, it's like some of my favorite music ever. And they're really, really long. So some of them, and some of them are short actually. But like the first one, which I guess is probably like the flagship track, which also I think has some connection to 9/11 as well as like a type of memorial type thing.
Okay.
And I don't actually know the full story behind it, but there's a YouTube video of the like the Twin Towers like smoldering with the track overlaid. And I don't, again, I don't remember the story behind that, but that's interesting too. It's like an hour and a half long, and it's a short, like maybe like 20-second loop that just repeats over and over again for an hour and a half. And, you know, if you're somebody who's into music like that, then you get it. But if you're not, you might think that that's really boring. But it's totally not, because the sound of it, like slowly disintegrating over an hour and a half, is just like totally mesmerizing. And what happens is you get like these sort of like very subtle like breaks in the sound, and just like these pauses and hiccups. And then you get like timbral shifts where like some of the high end starts to get rolled off, and there's like hums and like other sounds that sort of like come through, and like crackling sounds. And there's just like, there's so much to it. It's such a, it's just really complex. It's a very complex thing that's happening, and it's totally amazing. So I wanted to sort of capture that in a pedal, at least my own version of that, sort of an exaggerated version of it. And that's where the idea for the pedal came from. The way this is tied into this dude calling me today, which is really cool, he said, "Hey, did you ever send one of these pedals to like William Basinski?" And I was like, "No, you know, that's a really good question."
That is totally never, a very good question.
Yeah, and I was like, "No, I've never done that." And he goes, "Oh, you should." And I was like, "Yeah, I should. I'm going to like maybe, you know, I think I'm going to like get in touch with the, you know, somebody in his world and try to find his info." And then he goes, "Oh, he's a good friend of mine. He's coming over in 2 weeks."
Nice.
So I'm going to have him play the pedals and check them out. So it was just like, I wouldn't have gotten any of that if I didn't just have this dude call me. So that's how this is all sort of wrapped up in that little bundle of a story.
That's a trip. Wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So that was another nice thing that happened today. Coming back to the first question you asked me, what did I do today?
And you're good at bringing it around.
Yeah. That was a really good thing that happened today.
I'm surprised that's not the first story you told me, instead of going to get whatever that broccoli hybrid thing was.
Oh, the Romanesco.
Yeah, the Romanesco.
That was exciting too. It's just they're different, yeah, different excitement levels of those things.
Yeah, I would think the levels are slightly different.
I have a really weird memory too. It's like really bad, but also like selective in certain ways. So I probably honestly just didn't remember about that until something like sparked it, and then it was like there. So, yeah.
That's amazing that you, that kind of the guy that inspired the, you know, the device, so to speak, is actually going to be able to put his hands and ears on it. That's pretty incredible.
It's also nice that in some ways, I also like that it wasn't because I just sent him one. It was because it just happened organically. It's just like, he just happened to know he's going to meet up with this dude. I don't know. You know, I don't know how they're friends. I don't know their like connection.
Right.
But it's just like, he's just going to happen to go to this guy's house who has been like trying to get these pedals for me for a while. And like, he just did. And then we had this conversation, and it's like, yeah, it's cool how things sometimes come together like that.
So did the guy who called you know that was a big inspiration for you? Or, I mean, that's, how did even come? Okay. I was like, how did that even come up? That's amazing.
He did. Yeah. So I did, at some point, I think maybe like a year ago, I changed some of the, like sort of the ad copy or whatever, the information on the website.
Right.
For the product itself to reflect that, sort of beginning of it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I think before it didn't say anything about that, but then I think I just talked to somebody about it once, and I told them about sort of where it came from. And they were like, "Oh, that's interesting. You should tell people that." And I was like, "Oh yeah, that's probably a good idea. Maybe I should."
I think it's always a good idea. I mean, this is you know, kind of more business type of thing, but as a consumer and a rather avid consumer of Guitar Gear, it's always cooler to me when there's a story behind something.
Totally.
Like, it doesn't matter what that particular thing is. If I'm buying something and it's like there's a nice backstory to it, it's it's so much more interesting. Just to know, and then to be able to kind of pass that story along, like,
sure,
to somebody else. It's when you buy a when you're buying something that has a story, it's just it's so much cooler than just some nondescript gray box thing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it just, I think it allows you to connect with it more. It's not just like a thing. It's not just a thing. You know, there's some, there's emotion behind and purpose. You know, it's not just like, I want to make money off you, so I'm making this thing. You know, it's like, hey, there's a reason why I'm doing this. It's not just like, it's not just money. There's not, it's, this isn't all about money. You know, it's like, there's a thing that I really wanted to make and then like share with people. And then it sort of, yeah, totally.
Well, and then it's a thing where it does deepen that connection. And then, you know, when people are buying like your stuff or anybody else's stuff they choose to buy, if the connection's deeper and they're using that and they feel that when they're trying to make music, I think it kind of comes through. I mean,
totally.
You know, and it's kind of the same reason why I really like vintage guitars. Because it's like,
yeah, there's a story behind
there's
it.
There's something there. I don't even, you know, I don't necessarily know what all of that, what the story is, but there is something there. Somebody, you know, before me felt a connection to this, and now I have it. And yeah, it's just a weird, big, I don't know, it's an important thing, I think. Important piece of the puzzle.
Yep. Yeah, I figured it out eventually.
Well, man, you know, it always happens kind of like this. Like, I try to cut these off at an hour, but I almost every time I feel like the hour comes and we're just really finally starting to like get a good flow. But
yeah, who knows how long this even is? I think this could be like 4 hours. I think at this point,
it might be. Who knows? We've had so many gremlins plaguing us, but no, we're right around the hour mark now. And
cool.
As I like to say, everyone's already either home or in their cubicle, you know, on reverb.com when they're supposed to be working, and they've turned this off already. So we are but a distant memory with our vegetable talk and pedals and whatnot. What a depressing way to end it.
I know. I'm going to cry myself to sleep tonight for sure.
Don't cry. I'll call you. We can continue to talk.
All right.
And it'll be okay. I don't want this podcast to break anyone down emotionally.
Please. I hope not.
All right, man. Well, it was awesome talking to you. Thank you so much for taking multiple times to come on. It's really awesome. So thank you very much.
Yeah, the pleasure was all mine. Thanks for making the effort.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, for Brian Hamilton, this is Blake Weiland, and as usual, good luck and good tones. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
One last thing before we totally sign off here. I just want to remind you that if you do any shopping at Stringjoy, that's Stringjoy Guitar Strings made in Nashville, that will help me out as well. As I've said for years, I'm heavily involved in that company, and I really do think they're making the best products on the market. So if you would like to try custom strings, go to tonemob.com/stringjoy and check them out today. I seriously, seriously, seriously love what the team down there is doing. I help them out with all kinds of things, and by you supporting them, you are also supporting me as well. And hey, you need some strings, so why not get some custom strings just for your guitar and playing style? Again, the link for that is tonemob.com/stringjoy, and that will take you right to their website, and you can do all your shopping through there, and that will help everyone involved out. So thank you very much. Talk to you next time. We are brought to you by the wonderful folks at Gun Street Wiring Shop. Yes, Gun Street Wiring Shop. I've talked about them before. I used to say based out of Bend, Oregon, but guess what? Sean moved to my neck of the woods. Sean's in Portland. Sean is awesome and has helped me with a bunch of stuff lately. And if you have wiring needs for your guitar, he can help you too. If you want to get weird with it, he can get weird. If you just need to spruce things up a little bit, there's your guy. He takes all the guesswork out of doing your guitar wiring, and he makes it simple, and his customer service is top-notch, and I can't say enough good things about Gun Street as a company. I really respect Sean and what he's all about, and the product is top-notch. I've got 3 different guitars that now have Gun Street harnesses in them, and I could not be happier. So go to GunStreetWiringShop.com and check them out.